Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Deeney.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I travel to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast wouldn't happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to join us, to become a socio, and to get every interview we produce without adverts and before it goes out on the main feed, plus lots of bonus content, including the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. You will also get bonus content every month, including the audio versions of my regular columns for ESPN. So do please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter and join the club and get your family and friends to do so. Maybe even strangers in the street. Love you. Well, happy birthday to us. We're 6 years old. The Big Interview began with Gary Neville in April 2015. And to celebrate our anniversary, I still think of it as a huge privilege that nearly 110 interviews in, we celebrated our 100th interview with Rio Ferdinand, remember? I still think of it as a big privilege that in the midst of an extraordinarily hectic Premier League season, one of the key players this term, an absolute diamond of a footballer who mixes the ability to make it hard for opposition to play, and then when he's on the ball, produce moments of vision and inspiration and technique. It's still absolutely great that somebody like that, John McGinn of Aston Villa, will take time and stop and sit with us for nearly an hour to talk through the interesting corners of his so far terrific career. In part one, and this is part one, you'll hear about how he got more agile, a little bit better able to avoid challenges on the football pitch by dodging fireworks. We'll run through one of the most evocative, emotive moments in recent Scottish football history when Hibs fans denied for well over a century the sight of their team lifting the Scottish Cup did so and were serenaded by the fans at Hampden with sunshine on Leith. It was a controversial day, but it's a day that will live long in the memory of anybody who saw it. John was there. He was playing. One of the iconic moments of Scottish football, he reckons. I wouldn't disagree. He'll talk us through how in a dark, cold, often damp Love Street at Paisley, hidden under the main stand, he and dozens like him practiced Zidane turns and Cruyff turns until their feet were sore, but until the drill was in their minds and in the muscle memory forever. Haven't heard John speak so well about the life-changing decision when he was at Hibs and there were contacts from Celtic and the possibility of going to the club that he's always adored. And yet when they stalled, when they took their time, when they were complacent, how Aston Villa seduced him and how he made an extremely wise choice and came to England, at first in the Championship, now starring in the Premier League. You won't understand this, but Jimmy from Bargeddy gets several mentions in this and in part two. You'll understand the reason why when you listen to John McGinn on The Big Interview. He's bright, he's articulate, he's generous with his time, he's funny, a really likeable man. But above all, he's a footballer of immense energy and immense tactical movement and ability to make opponents really suffer against him. And then when he gets on the ball, He's a footballer who can simply make his team better, score outrageous goals, and entertain us. Which in the end, that's what it's all about. John McGinn on The Big Interview. Happy birthday to us. Welcome to The Big Interview, everybody. You've listened to me rattling on over the 6 years. This is our birthday. We've got a birthday guest on. 20 million of you have tuned in to listen to The Big Interview, which is an awful privilege. And one of the things that I trundle on about most was the days when I was growing up, when we had Scots of absolutely fantastic European and world class down in English football, lifting the European Cup, lifting the title. It makes me very proud to welcome to The Big Interview today a guy that's really enjoyable watching. His club, the Villa fans, adore him. People in Scotland knew long, long ago what a potent mix of intelligence and ferocity and technique this man has. But he's proving it in the Premier League, reputedly the best league in the world. Today we've got John McGinn with us. John, thank you for asking the club to delay training for an hour and everybody agreeing. I appreciate your status, but welcome to The Big Interview. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks for having me. Thank you. That was a nice welcome. Something blushing here.
Well, no, it's the truth. I mean, I grew up watching Villa win. I mean, I was old even by then. Win the European Cup with a couple of Scots in their squad, and I think from afar, having lived in Spain for 20 years, one of the things that makes me really proud watching you, also as a football fan, makes me enjoy watching you, is that you have there are few footballers that have that powerful mix, whereby you can dominate a midfield in terms of possession, ferocity, you're physically very strong, but the instant you're on the ball, the instant you see space, you've got a lovely use of the ball, you're looking to drive forward. If they're mad enough to let you around the edge of the box, any opponent, you've got what's called in this country, llegada. And llegada just means that ability. It's a brilliant one word. Because Spain's got brilliant vocabulary where we need to use 10 sentences. Llegada means just that ability to arrive at the edge of the box and do something special. This is a mix that makes you vital to Villa, great for Scotland, great to watch too. How much of your game, as you have it right now, is natural, and how much of it is developed?
It's actually a tough one because my game's evolved massively in terms of when I was younger growing up, I was a wee left winger, and I'll emphasise wee, anyone that watched me when I was younger, I was a wee left winger. The height of a sweary word, as you get called in the west of Scotland. And from then, growing up at St Mirren was an unbelievable academy, amazing. And even still to this day, seem to produce players. Unexpectedly, probably, for the facilities they have. And do you know what? Now they've got brilliant facilities, they've got their own training ground. But the youth coach at the time, David Longwell, I worked with him for 13 years, but he stressed the importance of technique, technical ability, and for anyone that remembers the old Love Street. So it started under the stand. So St Mirren had a big stand, but they had an indoor five-a-side pitch, and it wasn't massive. So all we managed to do in there, we were doing Zidane turns, Cruyff turns, everything, and that was for about 3-4 years. So technically, we were always pretty good. And then physically, it took me a while to kind of catch up with the older guys. So there was a gap after that, between about 15 to 16, 17, I really struggled physically. But after I grew up, and sort of grew up like my brothers, I had to change my position because I was no longer the height of the sweary word and no longer as fast. So I had to adapt. And Tommy Craig, a well-known Scottish coach, decided that I was no longer a left-sided winger or a left-back and shoved me into midfield, and probably that moment changed my whole career there and then.
You've given me a picture that I love because it's well before your time, and I'm a lot older than you, but I grew up with footballers who inspired me, who changed my life really because they made me want to come and live in Spain and see a better quality of football. But almost all the Scottish footballers who stood out there at any level when I was growing up in the 60s and 70s, they had these tricks. Now,
we don't need to talk about the death of street football and park football, because there are so many causes, and it probably began to happen even before you reached that height of a... But the picture of the old, you know, St Mirren ground with a big cavernous stand on presumably cold and dank winter and autumn nights, and under the stand there's a legion of wee kids practising Cruyff turns, and for anybody who doesn't know the Cruyff turn, it's kind of showing one way and then going the other way altogether. And the Zidane thing is the kind of step in the ball and drag the ball and do a little pirouette, and all, which you still use in Premier League games.
It's just something that's mad. See, if a ball breaks, it's normally after a bad touch, I mean, but the amount of times I practiced that under the stand at St Mirren, so it just kind of comes natural. I actually got sent off for it. I'll go offline a wee bit. So I tried it. I've been sent off once in my career, and it was for attempting a Zidane / Maradona turn in the box at Easter Road against Falkirk. But I happened to get that rescinded because I personally went to Hampden to describe that there was no intent. I was just trying to do this turn, so I got it rescinded for that.
Had you included the Zidane headbutt as the end part of the turn as well? Was that, had that been the problem, that you do the full turn and then bosh like that with Materazzi?
No, so I went. It was funny. I was quite nervous because we were in the Championship at the time and we were meant to be playing Rangers at Ibrox, which was a big game. One we ended up losing. I'll leave that out. But myself and George Craig was the head of football operations, and both of us went in our suits. And it was funny the way I went into the tackle. I busted another tackle and I was kind of spun towards. So I didn't actually see the guy coming. I just knew there was someone there. So then I attempted it. And while I attempted it, it was a bad tackle because my foot went over the ball, especially with VAR. I definitely wouldn't get it rescinded now. But I think the point I was trying to make was I was trying to execute the turn, then it came off. And Mark Kerrett was, believe it or not, that was on the receiving end of it. And got my marching orders for the first time in my career, but I don't know whether it was because my grandpa used to be on the SFA board. I don't know if that's why I got it rescinded.
No danger. No. Mr. McGinn would never have interfered. What I like a lot is that, you know, I think we've done, John, now 108 interviews. Everybody from Virgil van Dijk through Rafa van der Vaart, the ex-Real Madrid president, I don't know, we've had Michael Carrick, Darren Fletcher. We've had lots of people, actually, that you've played with and against. But interview two was Gordon Strachan. He told us a story that while he was out of work, he was furious. He would go and watch youth football in Scotland, and he would see young kids, 15, 16, go and see the some of the junior academy leagues. And he said they would travel 200-300 miles on a wet night in a bus. They'd turn up, and because of the brand of football he was watching, with the ball treated like an enemy and lumped long, he would count the touches and he said, there'll be young kids have travelled all that distance, they probably touched the ball 20 times in a game. And he went into his garage, emptied out his garage, went into his garage, told his missus, I think, to set the clock for 60 minutes and whatever. And he just, him and the ball in the garage, he was battering the ball off every wall to see how many touches he could accumulate when he was locked in that garage for 60 minutes. And his point of view was practice, touch, grow comfortable, make sure that it's almost instinctive, that the way you cushion it, what part of the body you use, and then what you're doing with the ball. That kind of equates to what you were doing. You must recognise that from what you were being taught under the stand in Paisley.
Yeah, it was. To be fair to David at that time had never played professional football, but he was so passionate about learning about the game. And at St Mirren, they gave him the platform to go and teach us a brand of football which was a bit different. And I don't know, I can't remember what the balls were called, but for years, and don't get me wrong, when you're a wee guy, you just want to use a size 5 and whack it as hard as you can. But we used the balls that didn't bounce.
Whatever the brand of the ball is called, I reckon this from the first time I played in the 80s in Spain, and the ball is smaller, harder, you can't lump it, it doesn't bounce. So you have to learn your touch, don't you?
Aye, so, and that was from an early age. And even when you're watching boys you played with at that age, no matter what level they're playing at, the first touch is there and they can play. And that was all from the coaching we got. And the nice thing, because the difficulty about youth football in Scotland now is, and probably English football has got the reputation of creating robots. Now, the one thing about St Mirren was you used to train at Feagie or Fergus Park, as people knew. So you had to be streetwise, even for a young age. And then it had a kind of boys club feeling. So people always talk about the famous Glasgow boys clubs, whether that's Hamley Row that Alex Ferguson's involved with and Drummy Amateurs, teams like that. But St Mirren had a kind of mixed feel. So that's why I enjoyed it so much. We had the best of both worlds and you had the competitive edge, but then you were learning a kind of brand of football, which was quite unknown at that time. And I'm just glad I came up through that pathway, definitely.
Yeah, last one in this. How streetwise did you have to be at Ferguson Park and why?
So do you remember Riyad Mahrez?
He did a trial, didn't he?
Yeah, aye, but I didn't train with him, but I don't know if it was his relations. I was going to ask him the other night, but he spent too long doing stepovers and beating us. But he came with a group of people. Now, I think I trained with one of the younger ones. Now, this must have been a massive culture shock, but Ferguson Park, great facility, but in what was probably, I think at that time, it got named the most deprived area in Scotland for 2 or 3 years. Now, the best thing for us as young people, we trained all the time and on a Friday night. So you got away from the distractions, which are very easy to come by. But the distractions were right in front of us because they used to be garden round the fence. So bonfire night, we were doing a shooting drill. My old coach, he was funny because he didn't really let it deter us. But I think we were 13, 14. We're doing a shooting drill and we're dodging fireworks because we were launching fireworks into the...
I wondered where you got that when this commentator says, and McGinn's dipped the shoulder.
I could probably play in Argentina.
can you beat us? We had a school game once, we were up to play at Peterhead, and at halftime we were walking off, and the little urchins in Peterhead ran on and stole the metal goals and melted down the goals, so we had no goals sitting half. I don't know if that equates to fireworks, but I do like that character in Scotland. And you've given me a nice segue, because we've got people who've been with us, backing us all the way in the 6 years. One of them is Kevin Jimenez. So Kevin has written in, and it's a good little note he's written. Kevin goes, "Living in London, I've only recently discovered the song Sunshine and Leith, and I've become obsessed with it. I've seen the 2016 Cup final footage where the Hibs fans sing it with the players after winning the Cup. It was spectacular. It gave me goosebumps and brought tears to my eyes. What was that special moment like for John? I'm envious you experienced it." I think that's some of the things we try to do in this podcast, just be honest and open and talk, not like journalists and players, but, you know, I was in Barcelona. I'm not a Hibs man. I'm an Aberdeen man. I love Aberdeen completely. It's Hibs Rangers. So you're kind of, you're shouting for Hibs as an Aberdeen fan. You're 2-1 down. You've had a good game, a really good game. Anthony Stokes, 80 minutes gone. There's the goal. The winner comes in. Liam Henderson plays out in Italy now. Tips it in. And I'm standing nose pressed to the television in Barcelona, just soaking up the drama and thinking, this is, Scotland does this quite well because the cops don't understand the fans are about to invade the pitch. Even from Barcelona, I could see it coming, you know, and I didn't have Sergeant Stripes. I know it's coming. There's a full pitch battle on the pitch between the fans and the players. And I know, hello, everybody at home, don't try this at home. We shouldn't approve of it, but I'm just lapping it up. And the presentation and that and the singing has to wait until the battle's finished, which is terrific. And then even as a non-Hibs fan, I'm standing watching that and I'm a wee bit, I can feel the emotion now going, I'm so jealous. Can you encapsulate the feeling of those last 5-6 minutes, the winner, and then what happens afterwards, particularly the singing?
Just a surreal day. We'd lost the League Cup final to Ross County at Hampden, but it could have been an incredible season. Now, you wouldn't swap it for the world, because if we won the League Cup or got promoted through the playoffs, which full credit to Falkirk, they knocked us out. But we might not have won the Cup in the manner that we done. But what a brilliant bunch of boys. Honestly, it would have been a crime for us not to have a trophy that season. And then the game was just an unbelievable spectacle. People down here don't realise about the sort of atmosphere, the build-up with the we stayed at the Cameron House in Loch Lomond. Then you come to the game and it was just, they could have fit 100,000 in that stadium that day. The atmosphere was incredible. Rangers needed the win just as much as us to kind of get back on the winning trail. They'd won the league, but they wanted it badly and we wanted it badly. And just the whole game, we played well. And to be fair to Rangers, they played well. But when Hendo came on, we always felt like there was an opportunity to get a goal for his deliveries. So Hendel whips it in, we get the equaliser, and you think, right, let's go. So I was just preparing for extra time, but in fairness to, just before we get the corner for the winner, Fraser Fivey goes on a dribble. And I'm thinking, where's he getting this energy from? I'm starting to dread the extra time. So Fivey goes on a dribble. We actually nearly score, and it goes up for a corner, and then Dave scores. And I just remember there's a video from the Rangers end of the press box, and you can just see just the relief. I think the amazing thing is players like Lou Stevenson, Paul Hanlon, Darren McGregor, they knew exactly what it was like being a Hibs fan, tormented. The 5-1 game with Hearts, having to watch Hearts parade the trophy around the city. They just had that rubbed and rubbed right in. And I think when the whistle went, I was first off. So I was first off the pitch. I went running towards Paul Hanlon. So I'm in the tunnel, and then the boys start coming in dribs and drabs. And the Hampden tunnel has got big doors. So one of the boys said, have you seen it there? So I opened the door and I just seen 6 or 7 police horses along the middle. So it was a bit strange. And by then I thought it was just Hibs fans on the pitch celebrating, but I would have been a bit naive to think that the Rangers fans would just let that happen and stay in their seats. But so then it started to get a wee bit messy. And in fairness to Kenny Miller, I don't think we would have managed to lift the trophy if it wasn't for Kenny Miller. So the Rangers players and staff were really frustrated. They weren't willing to go and get their medals, but Kenny Miller came in, basically understood that it wasn't their fault as players, congratulated us all and says, I'll make sure you get the trophy. So we managed to get the trophy. The only disappointing thing is you dream about winning Scottish Cups and doing the lap honour, but I think there was something a wee bit special just standing up on the podium and listening to Sunshine on Leith. Now, never growing up did I ever think I would ever have any attachment to the song. I knew it, I liked it, but it wasn't until the first Edinburgh Derby when you hear it, it truly is a special song. But at that time, I don't think it'll ever be beaten. Honestly, one of the best Scottish football moments just sitting there. And I remember my mum was just behind us on the podium. She's crying her eyes out. She's got a big green jumper on. You can see her in the highlights. But I think just for any football fan that doubts the passion of Scottish supporters, and for them, how much that meant to the Hibs fans. And we could spend the whole podcast talking about the party after it and the open top bus. It was just scenes that I don't think we'll ever see again, and I was just so proud to be part of it.
Before the rest of this big interview, I'd like to tell you that our entire archive of audio and video content is now on our new YouTube channel. We've begun filming all of our interviews, and there are already loads of clips with guests, including Rio Ferdinand, Connor Cody, Brendan Rodgers and Jamie Carragher, plus full interviews for you to watch and to share. Please do share with friends. Go to YouTube and search Graham Hunter, or click on the link in the show notes to this episode and become a subscriber. I honestly think you'll enjoy it. Thanks.
When you make the decision that it's time to move, it's really clear that you had an option. Celtic was an option. But I'm guided that as soon as you kind of see what Villa means, the training ground, maybe even ahead of Villa Park, because at this stage signing you haven't. I've always admired people who'd rather take a risk or even have an adventure than be a big fish in a small pond. It's something that drove me. I did a stupid thing, flipped a coin, came over here. No money, no contact, no language. Here I am 20 years later. So maybe I'm naturally a bit built to admire you. But I wonder, you'd have had bumpy moments as a youngster where for a short term in football, you don't have a contract, you don't have a job. And Andy Roberts is another guest on this podcast, and he talked about his time when he was told, no, and he's working Marks and Spencers, whatever. You've also had a time where in hospital, life is quite a precious thing, and I think that changes a man. when the decisions are made, is it pure bowled over by Villa? Is it a little bit about more adventurous because of what you've been through? How would you describe the way you make the choice?
By far the toughest choice in my life. So I spent 15 years as a season ticket holder at Celtic with my dad and my brothers. Always dreamed about playing for Celtic. And that's something that probably never ever leaves you. In fact, it doesn't. So the summer before, really close to going to Nottingham Forest on deadline day. Ironically, it was Mark Warburton and David Weir who was in charge at the time. But on deadline day, so it was tough because you have to balance. You need to weigh up: is this opportunity going to come around? I was loving my time at Hibs. I didn't want to leave, but I wanted to test myself at a higher level, and I wanted to go and see if I could do that. But full credit to my agent at the time, he, which is why we've got such a close relationship. Me and him are really close mates, but it would have been very easy for him to do what I was kind of getting pressurised from Forest. They wanted me to push through the move. That's not my nature. It's not what I wanted to do, and he was fully on board with that. So he said, listen, just back yourself. I believe you're a good player. You believe you're a good player. A Villa might come up next season, but I wasn't thinking of a Villa. I was like, aye, good one. He actually said that 12 months before I ended up at Villa, but in my head I'm thinking Celtic may come in. That's what I was thinking at the time. So I managed to have a good season. You read the reports and you see that Celtic are interested here and there, but you never actually believe it. So then it gets to the end of the season, Celtic put in an offer. It was way below what Hibs wanted. But when that first offer comes in, you start thinking, right, it's done. It's going to happen. So it was just a waiting game, the longest waiting game ever it ended up being. So I've ended up back for pre-season, and it was ironically, again, Neil Lennon, that was the Hibs manager at the time. The Hibs were amazing. Hibs, it's not a popular decision if you go for Hibs to Celtic, but I think everyone, the supporters, the board, we all had a kind of understanding that it was what I wanted, and I respect that I wouldn't have kept the door down. I wouldn't want to ruin what I'd kind of built at Hibs. I wouldn't want to go and do that. So I thought it had to work both ways. So initially it wasn't happening like that, but we ended up getting a wee bit more guarantees that things were going to progress. So a funny story, I remember driving to a European qualifier in the Faroe Islands with Hibs. So I'd been told Celtic are going to make an offer today for not to play in the game because of the link cup tied for the European games coming up for Celtic. So I'm waiting all day, nothing happens. So I'm going on these winding roads in the Faroe Islands, no knowing if I'm actually playing in the game or not. So I think at the time, my agent was waiting. I'd told my dad, mum and dad, of course, they were waiting. Nobody had a scooby. The players didn't know what was going through my head. I'm sitting staring out at the windy roads. But to be fair to Leanne and everyone at Hibs, they were waiting as well. They didn't know sort of what was going on. So I'm out checking the pitch. Don't know why I was checking the pitch. It was AstroTurf. And the gaffer came out, and at the time, and we were speaking. He was so good at that. One of the best man managers I've had. So relatable. He knew what I was going through. He knew what I wanted at the time. But the offer didn't come for whatever reason. So I remember speaking to the manager. Then I phoned my dad, my agent. It was sort of a three-way call. And I just thought, nah, I know what, I'm playing. I'm playing in the game. Nothing's happened. I'm playing in the game. So I played. Scored that night, actually. And it was good. Good performance, a bit of a wild game, but
is that the sort of 17 goal thriller where you're 2-0 down and it ends up 6-4? Or
I think it was that. It was against Runovic, but we won convincingly in the first leg. Even then, it was just a roller coaster because I thought, do you know what? I was proud of myself after because I thought this isn't right. I need to play in this game.
Behaviour matters. Choices matter. Behaviour and loyalty and doing the right thing still matters. That shines out in you, and I think everybody loves football. Understands that.
I believed in myself as a player, so I thought, right, well, if someone wants me, they're going to try a bit harder to get me, right? So then doubt started getting in my head, and I'm thinking, is this the right thing? And then it started becoming a wee bit of a sitcom, so it was getting more and more publicity. Offers eventually came in. So then you start thinking, so you're for the West of Scotland, you'd be naive not to think you switch on Super Scoreboard every now and again. And you've got Jimmy Bargeddy phoning in saying, ah, he's not going to get a game. He's not going to get a game seen in. But that was quite a popular opinion at the time. So then you start to worry, you think, am I making a decision with my heart here? Am I going to go and sit on the bench? And at that time, Celtic had an unbelievable midfield who had gelled together. I think Stu Armstrong was still there, Christie, Scott Brown, Sham, all of them playing at the top of their game, bearing in mind. So there was no doubt I had belief that I was going to go and play, but then I had to weigh up everything. Still in my head, wanted to play for Celtic, no doubt about that. But then eventually time went on, and believe it or not, I think this was August. So I don't know how it managed to get to August. I have no idea. you can answer that for me. But I started to become quite good at just playing. And do you know what? It probably spurred me on to play better. So in that spell was probably some of the best football in my career. We managed to win in Greece and Europe with a good start to the season. And do you know what? I ended up being content with just playing football, and I just managed to block out the noise. That's all it was at one point, and there wasn't really a resolution. And then Villa got a takeover. So I kind of knew there was a wee bit of interest. Villa got a takeover. And the next thing you know, I'm walking around Edinburgh Festival, and my agent phoned and says, oh, do you want to go and have a look at Villa? And at that point, I'm like, aye, I'll go and have a look. And I didn't end up coming back. I went to the training ground, the stadium, and I felt like the way I was kind of treated was just perfect. And that was a hard moment, because I remember speaking to mum and dad, and we kind of resigned defeat to the Celtic one. Mum and dad grew up edged in Celtic. I wanted to play for Celtic, but it just wasn't right. Now, it's something that maybe in the future you never know, but that is something I can't affect now. It's went past. And at that point, there was a bit of me that had to go and I had something to prove to a number of people. English football didn't have a clue who I was, first and foremost, which I quite liked. I thought, right, fresh start. People up the road that thought I couldn't play for Celtic.
Jimmy from Bargeddy, for example.
You're lying if you say you don't think, right, well, I'll show you. But I'm kind of proud of the way I dealt with it, because it would have been very easy to do the wrong thing. But I felt at that time we dealt with it magically. And then there was just something surreal about the night I went to Villa Park. They were quite clever in the way they'd done it. So they left a wee bit of the floodlights on. They knew I loved number 7. So the number 7 shirt was there. Walked me into box 7. Everything about it was just class. And I think my dad knew at that point I had made my mind up. Now, it wasn't even a case of I had to choose, because it never even got to a certain stage where it was an A or B. The A was just there. From then, I got flung straight into the game against Wigan at home, and it was just mad.
Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true, Graham Hunter, and Back Page. Our music is by Beer Jacket, who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us, at patreon.com/GrahamHunter. Here endeth the lesson.